It's been another week in racing. It's time to recap it. And who better to do it than Michael New Magic? Two bros slash pros who cover the highs and lows of racing around the globe on every one of their shows. Real fans look forward to these guys and their last thoughts, cause they know they're not talking out of their royal ascots. What they say makes sense. So ladies and gents, sit back and relax as Blinkers Off presents The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Magic Mike Show, episode 318, covering Keelan's Saturday Late Pick 4 sequence. Mr. Samich is currently in Washington, D.C., currently dining on the best choice prime fillets and shrimp. Joining me today, I have a man who is got his own up-and-coming horse racing show on YouTube. Got a big following going on, so we're excited to bring on Howard Kravitz. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, Magic. Great to be with you. Thanks a lot for having me on. Looking forward to it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Before we get into things, we'll let the viewers, in case they're not familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're born and raised in Chicago, and you're a math teacher, so you come at this a little bit differently. So talk about your horse racing background, how you got into things, and then maybe some handicapping tips that you always like to look for.
Yeah, sure. Interesting enough, really no one in my family was involved in horse racing at all. I started probably like a lot of people. A buddy of mine just went to the track when we were in late high school. Actually, my very first time ever at a thoroughbred track was Breeders' Cup Day 1989. And we were just watching a bunch of races on TV. We didn't even know it was the Breeders' Cup. It was a Gulfstream that year. But there were like 15,000 people just in the grandstands. And people were going crazy. I'm like, wow, this horse racing thing is pretty cool. Long story short, I actually started as a harness player, believe it or not, because it's a little bit easier to read the PPs. Most of the races, of course, only 1 mile long for the most part. And it's just a little bit easier to handicap from that standpoint. And then I got a lot more into thoroughbred racing. I live about 20 minutes from Arlington, and I've been a pretty serious handicapper for, I'd say, about 20 years. And just got involved in contests only a few years ago. And was fortunate enough 2 months ago to have my first qualification for the BCBC. So I'm actually going to Del Mar for my first Breeders' Cup. I've never been to Breeders' Cup. I'm going there as a BCBC contestant. But yeah, I enjoy, obviously, a lot of aspects about horse racing. And I started my own podcast. It's on YouTube. It's called the HHH Racing Podcast. I started it in late January and have over 30,000 views already and 500 subscribers. And I'm really enjoying it, following your steps and all the other great podcasts out there, having a good time with it.
Well, thanks for the comments. I wonder if you looked into, is Triple H Racing Podcast, is that taken? Is that associated with the wrestler a little bit? Because it's got a point. I know we all come from we're all big wrestling fans on the Racing Dudes side. So I see that, and I always think Triple H, the wrestler. But yeah, Howard's always has on some really big name guests too. So you should subscribe to his channel. It comes on. He's got weekly videos that come out previewing a lot like what Mike and I do, but. What Howard does with his guests that I've noticed is that when you go to a race or a weekend, so Mike and I would go to Keeneland, it's Mike and I. When you go to Keeneland, you actually have a Keeneland handicapper on, someone who is knowledgeable in the track and everything. So if you're looking for that sort of information, definitely go subscribe to the HHH Racing Podcast. Howard, I know that you are a big Arlington fan, or you were. Real sad to see it go. Our opinions on that on this show are pretty strong. But are there any specific things that you like to look at tracks? Maybe like Keeneland. I know Mike Samich is a big thing for inside speed when they're going two turns on the dirt, which is something that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I was actually at Keeneland last weekend for opening weekend. It was absolutely beautiful and met some people out there. You know, every track has, a little bit of bias sometimes, whether it be, for example, when the rails come out, I like to play board of speed on the turf. I don't like to be on the inside. For example, Belmont, with that widener turf, when they have the rails out on the widener at Belmont on the outer turf, I just do not want to be on the inside because horses seem to get, stuck there. So there are different angles at Keeneland specifically that we're going to be talking about. I mean, Mike is correct. I mean, speed is good anywhere on the dirt. I do find speed held very well, by the way, last weekend. Now, of course, we're going to be handicapping the second week of the card, so the track might change or whatnot. But, I think the Keeneland turf is pretty fair. It did play a little more to speed last weekend. But we've seen closers. So I think Keelan overall is really pretty fair.
Well, I'll see. I don't follow it nearly as often as Mike does or what you do. So I'm glad that you're on to help fill in the gaps with the knowledge. If we're at California, man, I got that thing backwards and forwards. But we get outside of California, my bias kind of disappears a little bit. Howard, you have watched the show before. You know how things go. We always talk about, before we get into the racing, what's the best thing that you saw since the last show? So I'll open it up for you. In the last week or so, what's the best thing that's happened to you that you want to talk about?
Rattle and Roll. Rattle and Roll, of course, won the Claiborne Futurity last Saturday, 8-1. I was fortunate enough to peg him on my race day blog that I have, which, by the way, is available. People can check out my show, and beneath the video players in the description, I have information about my race day blog, which comes out on Saturdays. It's very inexpensive. It's like Sambaum's picks, but I do pick fours, pick fives, etc. I gave out Rattle and Roll 8-1. Absolutely loved him. Of course, I'm wrong, you know, all the time, just like everyone else. But Rattle and Roll just got the dream trip. Brian Hernandez, by the way, he won a bunch of races. He's very underrated. I love Brian Hernandez. But got that sort of inside, outside, almost turfy kind of trip magic where he saved ground, then tipped out, you know, came three wide into the clear in that short stretch at going a mile and 16th on the dirt. And you definitely want to get sort of that head start there with that short stretch. Anyway, it was fantastic. It was one of the few times, I'm usually pretty quiet when I watch races live or on TV, but it was one of the only times over that weekend where I literally stood up from my chair and was like, yeah, because I had him as a win and pick five. So Rattle and Roll was the best thing I saw. Apparently, maybe not going to the Breeders' Cup, though, I understand. They're going to save him, I think, for some later races.
Yeah, it sounds like the Kentucky Jockey Club's going to be where they go, which is a move that we saw Tiz the Law's Connections do a couple years ago, right? He looked really impressive in New York, and they said they could go to the Breeders' Cup and be one of the top picks. It's going to be at Santa Anita, and that was the year when Santa Anita had some issues with the track safety, and they weren't sure what was going to happen. And if you look back, especially at the juvenile fields for the fillies and for the males that were on dirt, the horses that ran on that Santa Anita track didn't exactly come back very well. It's almost, I think Eight Rings is the only horse that's really come back, and even he is a shell of what he kind of could have been. So maybe it's a blessing that Tiz the Law skips it. Maybe it's a blessing that Rattle and Roll skips the Breeders' Cup this year. But congratulations on picking that. That was, Mike and I covered that sequence. It wasn't a horse that either of us had used. One thing that I learned out of that, I need to stop discounting Ellis Park. Ellis Park has actually had a lot of really good horses go off to Kentucky Downs, go off to Churchill, go off to Keeneland, and so that kind of plays into a little bit of the handicapping that we'll get into today. The best thing that I saw is I woke up to a notification this morning on my phone. Today is officially opening day of the 2021-22 season for the Detroit Red Wings. I'm excited, and in that honor, I'm going to play this one. Anytime I get an excuse to play the NHL sound effect for the ESPN, I get excited. Yeah, you're a Blackhawks fan. I know that they didn't start off the season very strong, but at least the Detroit Red Wings and Chicago Blackhawks used to have such an intense rivalry when we were both in the Western Conference. We don't have that anymore. Part of me, because the Red Wings are so bad right now and have been for a while, I'm okay with that. We'll come back to the Western Conference maybe when we're better again. But I'm very excited for the NHL season to get going. We're playing Tampa Bay, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion, so if we only lose 4-2 to them on opening night, I think I'll be happy with that.
Good luck. Good luck. By the way, you asked me off air what I liked about Rattle and Roll. If you just want me, just real quick, Rattle and Roll only had a 69 buyer in his race previous to the one that he won last Saturday, which, by the way, he got an 81. I know you and Mike talk about this a lot. I'm a big visual guy. I watch a lot of replays, magic. I would encourage everyone out there, spend as much time as you can watching replays, because that 69 was low, but it was mainly for two reasons. One is because they only went to the half in about 49-2, and it's just hard to get, you know, a two-turn high buyer number when they go slow to the half. But his visual magic, he was professional in behind horses. I'm talking about the race before Saturday.
In behind,
took a lot of dirt, which I love when two-year-olds do that. Because how many two-year-olds you see, you know, like the classic Causeway, who was 8-5, just went to the lead in his, you know, maiden race got a 5 on the sheets, like a 90 buyer, and he was the next best thing, right? Listen, he's talented, but a lot of horses go to the lead and win. So I like that Rattle and Roll came from behind Magic, ate a lot of dirt, made a nice split, and really accelerated well through the stretch of his maiden win. And that was the main thing that turned me on, other than the fact also that I thought there was a lot of speed in the race and it would set up. Things just worked out well. But again, don't get stuck on the buyer number or whatever number you use. The visual is very important. I know it's something you guys talk about a lot.
Yep, and especially with two-year-olds, which we will – we don't have two-year-olds this race or this sequence. Rare. I feel like it's the first time in a while. You talked about Brian Hernandez is an underrated rider. Very much agree with you. Dennis brought this up earlier in the chat. Brian Hernandez versus Flavian Pratt. Who we take it? Dennis, let's not get a little crazy here. All right. Yeah. I mean, it's Flavian.
Flavor Flav.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a Flavian Pratt show only, so we will stick with that. All right, Howard, let's get into things. We're looking at the late pick four sequence at Keeneland on Saturday, October 16th. Riders up. Our first race we're going to look at, race 7 on the card at Keeneland on Saturday, October 16th. This is a maiden special weight field of 7 fillies and mares, 3 and up, going a mile and a 16th, 2 turns on the dirt. Favoritism is on number 2, Sovereign Appeal, at 8-5. You also have the rail horse Big City Mama at 2-1. Where are you going on top here, Howard?
So full disclosure for you, Magic, I did not see the morning lines before I handicapped last night. I found this a pretty weak race for the level. The buyer power is only 73 in this race, and there's only one horse in this entire field, Magic, that's even run above the buyer power in all their PPs. So this is, I think, a pretty weak group for the level. I hate to chalk out here. Sovereign Appeal seems most logical, but I would never, never bet this horse on the win end at anything really less than 3-1, I would say. She's hard to trust. She's a four-year-old, sort of late in her four-year-old season, that's 0-7. So this is not a horse I would normally like. However, she is very consistent. She has early speed. She's going to get good position. And there's a lot of other horses, frankly, I do not like. I know that's a bit of an amateurish kind of view on it, but Sovereign Appeal seems most logical. I guess the horse that I would, bet would probably be the one, although not a 2-1, Big City Mama, who, again, we just talked about replays, Magic. That last race is a replay special. Broke slow, then sort of rushed up, had to wait. Lost by 11, but lost to a very talented horse. So I think the one is going to set a nice trip and probably in the pocket and improve. I've got 2-1-7 in this race, but I think you have to go pretty deep. It's not the strongest bunch of main special weights for Keeneland.
Yeah, this is actually I would agree with you. This is pretty weak. And in terms of the quality and what you're also getting as far as field size, only 7 for a Saturday event kicking off the pick four. Yeah. I found this this is just a lot of, they feel like maidens, like lifetime maidens. I went with the 2 horse on top because she's going to be 3rd off the bench later here in her 4-year-old season. She's a daughter of Ghost Zapper. So the only time that she's ever tried going 2 turns at Keeneland, she missed by a neck. Biscizza was in the saddle. That was last October. So now you fast forward a year, 3rd off the bench. I'm hoping that gives her a step forward. She'll have her early inside speed. She was drawn all the way outside in the 10 post that day. So maybe drawn back inside will help out. The one I think is going to be outrun too early, and I don't think there's enough speed in here they're all going to fall apart and come back. They all could be bad enough that they all come back to her, but I don't think the pace sets up that way. The 4, as far as the horses that haven't started, the 4 was possibly intriguing, but I don't know anything about the owner trainer. This horse has been working at smaller tracks and circuits and kind of comes in here. I know it's an angle Mike Somich likes, is if a horse is working there at like Mountaineer or Charlestown and then comes over to Keeneland, all of a sudden it entices him. I just think that these horses are pretty bad. I used the 7 Berat like Hughes did. I went too deep. This horse was bet down to 7-2 for her debut for Reeve McGee, who's Shug McGahey's son. Reeve McGahey doesn't have a huge sample size. First time starter is not a huge thing for him, but he can get horses to win second time out at 2 at 10%. The fact that this horse was 7-2 on debut, broke poorly and never ran a step, and then they come back here. Now we're getting 6-1. Somebody must have liked something about this horse, right? And now we're going to stretch out. You can just chalk up that maybe that horse's debut was bad, didn't like the gate. The issue I have is since then, the works aren't really that good. It doesn't anything about the works that makes me go, yeah, but the fact that somebody saw something on this horse was bet down to 7-2, and now we're coming back at 6-1 in a pretty bad field. I'm stretching. I'm looking for reasons to go deeper than the 8-5 favorite, because like you, I don't want a player at that short of a price, and this is where I landed.
By the way, Magic, the four horse you mentioned, Rocket On Board, the first-time starter, when was the last time that you, Popsy, liked a horse that Mike maybe bet more money in this race than the horse actually cost? This was a $1,000 buy, the four. So who knows?
Yeah, that's well, and she's I mean, the sire commissioner's got 13% winners despite being having a $2,000 stud fee. He's got the siblings 5 of 7 have won, including some did in their first starts. This is crazy. Dennis said that he singled the two. There's no speed really unless, you know, the six pops or something. I agree with you that it does get a little dicey later in the second leg. So especially if you are thinking you need to go deep in the grade one race, this is a spot. I think you just single and pray and hope that it comes up chalk.
Yeah, it's definitely a way you can go. I mean, I think there's other races where you have to go deeper. This just doesn't feel like a race that you should go deep on, but it's also a race that you can't trust a lot of horses. So it's a real confounding way to start the pick four, I thought.
Well, let's hope that we survive with our picks there. We'll go to the second leg here, race 8 on the card at Keeneland Saturday, October 16th. This is the grade 1 $500,000 Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup. The field of fillies, 3-year-old fillies going 1 mile and 1/8 on the turf course, so they're getting a nice long run down the stretch the first time. Favoritism is on the number 4, Empress Josephine, at 3-1 for Joe O'Brien. She was just here last week, finishing a late running third against older fillies and mares in the 1 mile First Lady. You also have Technical Analysis at 4-1. And Shantasara at 7-2 for Chad Brown. He's trying to win this race for his fourth time. I'll tell you right now, I'm against both of the Chad Brown horses in this spot. I'm taking a stand against them. I know you're not, though. You are going to be using them in this race, so I'll let you talk about them.
Well, I'm against, full disclosure, I'm against one of them. Shantasara, let's talk about her for a minute. I saw her in person at Arlington on a million day or whatever day we're going to call that now. And that's not why I'm picking her. I just think she's improving. I mean, I don't think distance is an issue at all. She ran huge in the Pucker Up at Arlington, and then she came back and validated that in the Jockey Club Oaks Invitational. Granted, she got a great trip, but I actually think the three is going to be better, you know, covered up, and she was not covered up in that race. She just sat on the outside and went by a pretty decent horse in Higher Truth. So I think that was a pretty good effort. I don't think distance is an issue. And I'm a little bit like you. I'm against some of the horses that might take more money. So I'm not sure who's going to be the favorite here. I'm guessing it's going to be the Aiden O'Brien horse. But I like Flavian here. I think she's going to set a good trip. She's improving, which I can't say that for some of these horses. So I'm going with Shantasara on top. But I think the horse to beat is probably Empress Josephine for Aiden O'Brien. He's done this move before, by the way, where he's coming back in only a week. She ran last week in the First Lady and ran very well, losing to a blowout in Regal Glory. So I think the quick turnaround should be a vote of confidence, really. I think this was the plan actually all along, from what I understand, to do this. If she runs the 101 buyer or something close to it that she ran last week, she's going to win by 2 or 3. I don't know if she can repeat that, but it's Velasquez in the saddle, putting blinkers on. I think she's going to be forward, and I do like her. The one horse that I just want to mention I don't really love is one of the Browns, and that's Technical Analysis, who will be one of the favorites, but I mean, who has she beaten? I mean, she really, you know, Runaway Rumor, okay, not bad. I mean, Fluffy Socks, you know, I mean, I don't really think she classes up. Certainly her numbers fit, but, you know, and she's also could have distance question here. Her only run at 1 mile and 1/8 was not good. Maybe that was just a coincidence, but I don't know. I know it's a Klarovich, it's Jose Ortiz, blah, blah, blah. You have to be against someone here. I'm against Technical Analysis. I would almost prefer the Donico Bribing Horse, another Euro, the 5 nicest, who I think is interesting coming in with intent, 10-1 morning line. But in general, I like Shantasara and Empress Josephine against the 2, and I think the 5 is interesting.
My biggest concern with Empress Josephine, who's my top pick, is wondering if the distance is too far, which is weird to say when it's a Galileo filly, but I only say that because the only time that she tried going beyond a mile in her career, she's done it twice. She tried a mile and an eighth. It was on soft going. She was second, but it wasn't very close, and it was an ungraded stakes at a smaller course. And then she goes to a Group 1 race going a mile and a quarter against older fillies, and she's last of six in that race, but didn't really get persevered with. But I have concern there, but I said Joseph O'Brien earlier. I meant Aidan O'Brien. Yeah. Joseph O'Brien's one of his sons. The other one's training the five nicest, who I used. She was a nice third in the Irish Oaks. The fact that she was beaten nine lengths, ignore that. The horse that won Snowfall is going to come over here for a Breeders' Cup race and be a top two choice for total whichever monster. One she goes to. The fact that she was a half length behind second, that's what catches my attention. So I like that she was doing very well in the Irish Oaks and she comes over here. We're catching 10-1, and Joseph O'Brien did this earlier in the year. I can never remember the horse's name, but came to New York with a horse that was 10-1, and there was a bunch of other big horses in there too, and he snuck out the win. So you definitely don't want to discount that. As far as the brown horses go, I think that you nailed it with the two horses. She hasn't really beaten anybody. That's where I'm scared about. I don't think that her tactical speed is going to serve her pretty well here. Very slow come home times in the last two races. She had the lead in Lake Placid. They come home in 32 seconds. It was on yielding turf, but that's not a very good time. The Lake George, the final quarter, it comes in 25 seconds, and that's on firm going at Saratoga, and she wasn't winning by daylights there. So the slow times there scare me on the technical analysis. Shantasara hasn't beaten a whole lot either. She is improving. If you want to use one of the two, go that way. Also, that's the one that has Pratt, but I'm not going to do it. I'm actually going to also use the nine horse, and I'm going to have to even scroll down on the screen because that's how far down she is. But this horse is going to be coming over for Haggis. Brian Hernandez Jr. is picking it up, and we've talked about how good he is, how sneaky we think he is. Dennis agrees with us on that. You're getting a filly that won a Group 3 race at Deauville, a very talented group that she beat. Just Beautiful came back and won next out. She has beaten boys before, which I like when I see with their three, they're younger in their careers, and they go take on open gender. They do that a lot in Europe with their good horses. She hasn't tried a mile and an eighth. That Prix de Lury was her first time even going a mile, so there is concern about that, but being by Kodiak, I think she should be able to handle it if she gets the right setup. There are some distance questions, but at 15-1, getting Hernandez up, I'm going to take the nine horse too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can ever. I think we've learned over the years, even though the U.S. horses have absolutely improved on turf, some of that's because we've been stealing, some of the breeding, you know, we've gained from Europe at the Tattershall sales and other places. But listen, any Euro in a grade stake in the United States, you have to take into strong consideration. But I would just say, and I've talked about this on my show, Magic, just because it's a Euro doesn't mean they're going to win. I mean, you shouldn't just blindly use a Euro within your, you know, horizontal bet, because you're just wasting money. You got to do your homework like you have, like I do. Not every Euro is the same. I mean, there are European horses that are not very good as well. But when you bring a horse over for a grade one, obviously there's a lot of intent there.
And one of those horses, not don't bet every single Euro, is a horse that Shantasara beat in the Jockey Club Oaks, Harajuku. That didn't work out very well in that race, and you know, not using Shantasara here. Let's move on to the third leg of the late pick four sequence at Keeneland on Saturday, October 16th, race 9. We've got a field of 10 males, 3 and up. Non-winners have won other than going a two-turn dirt mile here. Favoritism is on the number 5, Ducali, at 8-5. If you listen to the Magic Mike show, this horse has been discussed more than once. Mike and I took hard stances against him last time out when he lost very badly to Baby Yoda, who then came back and lost very badly. So I'm curious to see if you used Ducali, because I sure as hell did not.
Well, again, full disclosure, I'm looking at the mooring lines literally for the first time as we talk. I had no idea Ducali would be 8-5. By the way, in that Baby Yoda race, I loved Olympiad. I put him, who finished second, and he ran. He was off a big layoff. He ran a huge, he got like a 103 buyer and lost by 10. I mean, it was just, you know, it was like you're wrong, but you're right, but you're wrong situation. I'm almost embarrassed to say now based on the mooring line, but I do have Ducali on top. I want to give you a stat, Magic, that I'm sure this won't change your mind, but I think it'll be interesting for the viewers. It's a small sample size, granted. However, Brad Cox, sprint to route, blinkers off, 3-7. Again, it's only 7 horses, but I'm a numbers guy. That's 43%. That's just enough horses for me to say, that's interesting. So I think you do have to take a look at this horse. I do have Ducali on top. I'm assuming the blinkers off is going to matter a lot because this horse is showing a ton of speed. I'm not worried about the distance. He's by Twirling Candy of a Spicetown mare. So I'm not really concerned about the distance. They need to teach this horse to relax. I'm assuming that's what they've tried to do in the morning. I don't have any intel, but she's very fast. Or excuse me, he's fast when he's right. I don't see a ton of early speed in here. I'm assuming they're going to let the speed go and try to rate a little bit. And I have Ducali on top, but it's a bit of a soft choice, to be honest. I'm probably more interested on the win end based on the odds with the number four, Winterpool, who I will say doesn't maybe have the upside of some of the others, Magic. I mean, he's been in starter allowance 50, but all this horse does is run consistent buyers in the low 90s, figures to get a nice trip, will have no problem the distance, has a work over the track, and also, you know, I think you will get that 7-2. So my top choice here would be Winterpool because he's the most consistent. But again, he doesn't have the upside that some of the others do. So you just have to make a decision, you know, how you feel about that. And my third horse I have is a horse I got to say I almost put on top. And that's number two, Out of the Legend. It was coming off a long layoff for Steve Asmussen, but this horse has been working like an absolute train. I don't have workout reports at LS Magic, but all you see is bullet, bullet, bullet. I mean, really impressive. They threw him into the wolves in the San Diego Derby in April against Rock Your World. That didn't work out well, you know, but obviously this horse has a ton of upside. Interesting breeding on the dam side out of a Chester House mare. So you might think turf at some point also, but based on the intent, the workout, the possible good trip, and the huge possible potential, I would be very interested in Otto the Legend, who's 8-1 morning line, but I have him only in third in my picks.
He is my top pick. The fact that he broke his maiden at Oaklawn Park, which in the springtime is that's where the best maidens in the country are at Oaklawn Park, at least in terms of depth. So the fact that he breaks his maiden there caught my attention. Then Asmussen, like you said, goes straight in the deep end for the San Anita Derby. Something clearly went wrong. Like the horse was ninth, beaten 64, like eased early, and then we don't see him since then. Something clearly went wrong with the horse that day, so I'm scratching that off. You mentioned the fact that you like that Ducali is by Twirling Candy, or out of a, what was it, Twirling Candy mare? Yeah, by Twirling Candy.
He's
yeah.
by Twirling Candy out of a Spicetown mare, yeah.
Twirling Candy is Out of the Legend's half-brother. So if you like Twirling Candy, you got to like Out of Legend, which you do. And you mentioned it, the bullets caught my attention. I used the four as well, Winterpool. The issue with him, he cannot drop off way back like he did in his last race, which he won at Saratoga, but you can't do that at Keeneland with the short stretch. Yep. The tighter turns that they have on the dirt there. But that race, the last time out, yeah, it was a 50K starter allowance. First of all, it was at Saratoga, so that automatically makes it the best 50K starter allowance in the country. And then that race produced a winner who had a 93 buyer and two horses that both finished second in their next start. So that's been a productive race. I didn't use Ducali. I think that being by Spicetown mare means that two turns is going to be pretty tough, and he's facing a lot of other speed in here. We're taking the blinkers off. I don't know that that's going to get him to relax. Maybe it will. Brad Cox, usually, if he takes blinkers off in a race, it's been at least one or two works that the horse has been without blinkers and has made him go, okay, now we're going to try this. But with as poorly as that Baby Yoda race has come back and how much of a fluke it looked like, I'm going to pass on him. Also, Dennis brought this up, and this is something that I took into consideration. A lot of these horses you'll see, if you look in the PPs today, they say entered October 14th in Keeneland's race 8. A lot of these horses were scheduled to go that. That was a one-turn, seven-furlong dirt sprint. That's where Ducali belongs. Ducali didn't draw in. He was on the also eligible list, and that's why you see him here. I firmly believe that that's the race that he should have been in. This one, I think, is going to be too much for him. I just think that the speed that signed up to face him here and with as badly as that Baby Yoda race came back, I don't want anything to do with him. The 9, Mr. Tip, is going to be my third horse that I use here. A lot of this is a connections play. I love Mike Maker horses, especially when they're 3 Diamond Farms. Tyler Gaffleone is riding. He hits at 21% for the barn. I love a horse that's 4-18 facing first level allowance horses. This is 9 winners and 1 other than. He's right. Won a whole bunch of other than. So I'm going to use him. He's got the breeding that says that he should be able to handle 2 turns. Is he good enough? I don't know, but I love the connections. And I think that 5-1, I think that price is actually going to go up a little bit.
Do you have a pin, by the way, on 1 Malibu Star? Coming off a long layup for Kelly Breen, who, by the way, is only 4-30 with 6+ month layoff. I just want to let everyone know out there that Kelly Breen is not great on these layoff situations, but also has a bunch of bullets and has potential upside also.
As far as he goes, I don't usually have a strong opinion of horses that winter at Aqueduct. Usually, okay. If you're good enough, you'll be in Florida or you'll be at Oaklawn. So the fact that that's where he was at, and the one time that he tried going two turns at Aqueduct, he was seventh. He was destroyed by Chestertown, who is a horse that we drafted on our fantasy team a couple years and who is a freaking mule. He's a $2 million mule and should not have beaten anybody, let alone that horse, by 33 lengths.
Yeah, Chestertown, I mean, New York bred, right?
Yep.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yep, $2 million New York bred. But we definitely at least we agree on the two and the four there. I think the two, the fact that you feel strongly about him or that you want to use him, 8-1, I'm not so sure if that's what we're going
to
get
we're
on
not
here.
Getting 8-1. I'd say 4-1, to be very honest. I think he's going to be bet. We'll see. If by the way, if he's dead on the board, Magic, would you look at that horse differently?
No, because if he's dead on the board, I'll probably just go, well, I clearly saw something wrong and just laugh.
Okay.
I mean,
it's an interesting conversation that we've had, viewers on my show, where especially horses off layoffs or two-year-olds, if they're dead on the board, does that change your opinion? I think if you're confident with your handicapping, you know, then you just go ahead and go for it, you know, but if there's a horse like on a big drop down that's dead on the board, I think that's a different situation, but that's a whole other conversation. I was just curious to see what you thought about that.
It is a good question. I will say it would make me a little concerned unless I saw all the money going to either Winter Pool or Ducal. If Ducal is getting hammered, I'm going to feel comfortable that I'm still playing against him, because I personally believe strongly in my handicap and that he's a sprinter. But I definitely, if one of those two horses really takes a huge pounding, I'm going to go, okay, well, that makes sense. But based off those works, which is a huge reason I like Out of the Legend here as well, if he's dead on the board after those works, I think that's when I'm a little concerned, because it's straight bullets. It's all bullets on that workout page.
That Ducale you mentioned with the, you know, that he was in for an AE, that's something I did not know. So that's great information. That is something I'm going to have to take into consideration for Saturday.
It could be nothing. It's horse racing. You can try and make a case for and against something, literally any possible detail. You just grab at straws and hope that you're right. We'll move on to the last leg here of the late pick four sequence of Keeneland Saturday, October 16th, race 10. You've got a field of 12 fillies and mares, 3 and up, plus 2 also eligibles, plus 2 main track only entries, going 5.5 furlong sprinting on the turf course. This is the deepest I went because, admittedly, I didn't get the chance to watch replays as much as I wanted. Howard, I know you definitely did, so I'll keep my opinions brief on this. I want you to take over here. The two horses you're agreeing, which you're only going too deep when I'm going the deepest, I'm using as well. So talk about the horses we're going with.
Sure. So full disclosure, not a big fan of turf sprints. It's my least favorite race of all. There's just a lot of weird things happen. You know, you get into any kind of little trouble going 5.5, just about anywhere in the country, you got issues. So I'm not a huge fan of turf sprints. So you're probably wondering, okay, so why am I going only too deep? I really like a horse here, and I'm looking at the morning lines again for the first time on your screen, and the horse I like is not favorite, which I like quite a bit. I really like Social Chatter, the one here, for Vicky Oliver and Rafael Bejarano. This horse is improving. Her last race at Kentucky Downs, she went 7 furlongs. She was very professional. How about a final eighth, Magic, in 11-3? On that track, that is fast. 7, I know, I look at... You know, you got to look at the incremental splits as well if you have access to a formulator or whatever, you know, speed figs you like to use, whatever format. I like the 11-3. You could tell on the visual, she closed very well. There is a whole bunch of speed in this race. And I know it's 5.5. Someone might just get loose and wire the field, even though there's like 5 speed horses in the race, because you and I have seen it all over and over and over again. But I gotta do what I think is right. And I think this race has a chance to fall apart a little bit. I like Bejarano is sticking around. The horse is coming out a good enough race. If you look at the horses that she beat a bunch of horses that are running in the, you know, mid-70s buyers. There's other horses like the 6 Signify, who's going to take money and could win. But that field that Signify beat was awful compared to the Social Chatter race. So this is something that people have to look at. Does that mean that Social Chatter is going to beat Signify? Not necessarily, but I do think Social Chatter, you know, is coming out of stronger races. So I feel pretty strongly about that. So I do like Social Chatter on top. I think we might get that 4-1. The other horse I think you have to use, of course, is the Wesley Ward, Chili Pet in the number four, who looks like the speed of the speed. Going against Wesley, I'm one of the idiots that actually went against Golden Pal last weekend, Magic, because I wasn't so sure that, you know, there's other speed in the race and blah, blah, blah. I was trying to beat a 1-20 horse. Didn't work out well. That's okay. Wesley Ward is just so good at Keeneland. I mean, on the turf. And this horse has a ton of early speed. There is other speed in there. I don't know if JR is going to, or excuse me, yeah, Velasquez. I don't know if he's going to rate or not with this filly, but, you know, she's very good. She's going 6, 5.5. She was in the Lady Shipman, you know, which came back a pretty good race. They sent her over to, you know, Ascot 2 years ago. So, but she's been off since April. There's some question marks on this horse, in my opinion. And then I would use the 6 also, sorry, the Signify as a closer in the race, even though I do like the 1 better. The main thing I like about the number 6, last comment, is that this horse used to be more speed, and I really like Magic when horses have learned to do something different. It looks like they're trying to change her style. She ran well last time and closed and won. So I'm going to go in this race 1-4-6. But I also have a few others that I would use if your budget allowed.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the one horse, Social Chatters, who I used on top as well. I think the fact that she's done extremely well at 5.5 furlongs on turf, she's come back from 7 at Kentucky Downs when she was flying. I mean, it says she won by 3/4 of a length, but she had that pretty measured in the stretch. I think that horse is going to be definitely sharp cutting back here. I'm with you on the 4 Chili Pet, and she was actually the last one I threw on here, and it's because it's Wesley Ward. I kept trying so hard to leave her off because I think that she's going to get hammered in the win betting. You mentioned that you wonder if they're going to try and rate her. I think if you gave that horse a dictionary with one word in it that was the word rate, she still couldn't find it. This horse is fast, but Wesley Ward is 8-for-9 on the board at the meet, 7-for-9 in the exacta, 4-for-9 winners. He's sending his best to Keeneland. That's what he does. So I wanted to try and beat her because the Golden Pal argument from last week, right? This horse is going to get hammered. There's no value.
Yep.
But especially if I can get like my 10-1 in the grade one race, if I can get that horse home, if I can get the upset from the big favorite in the first race, I'm trying to beat Ducali. Listen, if that's the one chalk horse that comes in and the rest I'm hitting, we're doing okay. The 6 horse was my third one that I used. I think that since this year as a 4-year-old, she's really kind of turned things around. And it seems like Brissette's figured out, okay, dirt, she's okay, synthetic. She's okay. Turf. Hey, wait, turf sprinting. She seems to be, that seems to be what she's good at. So I like that they're in this spot. I don't usually love Rudy Brissette in stakes races, but when it's a horse like this, that, as you said, they're experimenting, trying to figure what she's good at and her running style. Rudy Brissette's a true horseman. So I, in this case where he's building on a project, I think it's going to pay off. I also use the 7 just to the outside. Sophie Doyle's in the saddle. I'm a big fan of Sophie Doyle horses. This horse had 2 sprints going 5 furlongs on turf. Yeah, it was Indiana Grand, but 66 and 77 buyers. That 77 buyer last time out is as good as what anybody in this field is going to be able to produce. So I think that this horse is sneaky at 12-1. I don't know anything about the trainer, but kind of building off of that Mike Somich angle, when you see these smaller track trainers suddenly show up at a Keeneland, they tried Kentucky Downs. Maybe the yielding turf was against her that day. But they're being aggressive with her from a very small barn. So that sort of thing caught my attention. When you see that, is that something that ever catches your eye, Howard, when it's a small barn like that going to a big meet?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first question you have to ask yourself is where could this horse go, right? I mean, this, you know, I think she's interesting. She's only a 3-year-old. You know, she's by Street Boss, which was a heck of a dirt sprinter. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is a Midwestern, you know, based horse. So where would they go with her other than Keeneland at this time of year? So I think geography has to be taken into some consideration. I suppose they could run her at Indiana. Actually, Indiana might be over. It's over soon. So there probably wasn't a race that she could go in there. So it would seem to me that Keeneland's probably the only logical spot that she could go. But anytime you do have a small barn that goes to a big track, I think you do need to give a little extra consideration. I'm not a huge fan of Sophie. It's nothing. I don't know if you watched the races at Keeneland yesterday, but her ride on Naval Laughter, no bueno. She was like, she made like a very big early aggressive move that normally I would like, but it didn't work out at all. I don't mean to go back to yesterday, but I do look at it. But then again, Magic, I mean, where else would she run? I think that's something that needs to be taken a little bit into consideration.
Going back to Signify, I forgot to mention this. She's cross-centered in the Buffalo Trace Franklin County Stakes, the Grade 3 at Keeneland. That's the turf sprint tomorrow. I don't know if she's going to run. She's 50-1 in that race. But Brissett likes Signify enough that he thought about doing that. Thank you for answering on the 7. I didn't think about it that way, so I'm really glad that I asked you. The 11, Recoded, is going to be the last horse to make my ticket here. This horse is 7-24. This is non-winners of 2 other than this horse wins pretty much every 3 starts. She hasn't won on turf yet, but her career best buyer came on turf 2 starts back. It was at Kentucky Downs. She misses by a neck when she had the lead. So now we're cutting back from 7 at Kentucky Downs, which is pretty much a mile. Now we're going 5, 5.5 at Keeneland. I think this is going to be a better spot for her. It is a little curious that she's 4. She's made 24 starts. Only 3 of them have been on turf, but she's finished 2nd twice on turf, including at Ellis Park in a 5.5 furlong sprint back in 2020. So at 8-1, I think the outside draw sprinting is going to be a good spot for her. She is fast, but she's going to be outside and be able to sit off and at least give the jockey options here. So I used the 11 Recoded as well to make up the last of the ticket. Did you happen to look at any of the other horses here? I know Cindy says that she likes the 15 Song River, which that horse would only come in if the race was rained off. But were there any other horses, maybe the 13 or the 14 from the AEs that you liked?
I'm just looking. The Reagan's Edge, the 13, looks very much dirt. Never been on turf. So although tried to get on turf once, was scratched off. Mm-hmm. The 14 is turning back. I don't think turnbacks work real well in turf. I much prefer turnbacks on dirt. I don't have hard evidence of that. I just know a lot of smart people that I respect feel that way, unless it's a turn back like to 6.5 down the hill, which is really isn't as much of a turn back. But when you're going a mile to 5.5, I'm not a big fan of that. Also, the horse, the 14, was at Arlington this summer, and as much as I'm an Arlington guy, the quality of Arlington just has not been good for years, frankly. Wasn't that good this summer. I will mention another horse I looked at a little bit, the 12, Sarah C, who, okay, I'm contradicting myself, is turning back from a mile, but was racing at 5.5 before that, Magic, and, you know, was in a stake at Ellis, you know, has buyers sort of in the competitive enough in the high 70s, low 80s. I just, the 12 hole in a sprint race where she's almost automatically going to be wide, not a big fan. But listen, it's, you know, for D Wayne, right? Wouldn't that be a story? I don't think she's impossible. I mean, look, it's a turf sprint. Okay. So, and there are no standouts in here. So by the buyers, you could use a lot of different horses. I think the 12 would not shock me. Either is a C in my ABC ticket maker bet.
This wouldn't be the biggest surprise because she's coming out of 2 really nice turf stakes, including the Kentucky Downs Grade 3. Yeah. I also would never bet this horse unless I hit the all button. I'm never going to get to a D. Wayne Lucas horse in this kind of a field. No offense to him, but this isn't – I don't look at this field and then look at a D. Wayne Lucas horse with this form and go, yeah, this horse has got a puncher's chance now. But – you're getting a 10-1. I think you're going to get probably double that, close to it, by the time the post goes off. And she does have the back class. You talked about the cutback. You don't usually like it. In this case, she's done a lot of her running sprinting on turf. So
yeah.
I guess it's not quite a true cutback there. But very interesting there. Yeah, in a lot of ways you can go. And like you said, at least once. This is a turf sprint. Crazy shit's going to happen. It's a given. You just got to – I'm going 5 deep hoping that I throw the dart at the right one that comes out on top.
Well, the other thing, and I'm sure you guys talk about this, there are like literally 6 or 7 speed horses. So if they do go, you'd think some of these outside horses, you know, should be able to get over, right? So if they're going sort of at a moderate pace, it's almost impossible to get over. But if they're gunning, you know, 21 and 3, 44, then in theory, any of these outside horses could just tuck in. So I'm sure that's something that you guys talk about or have talked about. That makes a big difference. I mean, don't just automatically, you know, toss the outside post just because. It's very situational based on the race flow.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Magic Mike Show. Thanks for joining Howard and I for a look at Keeneland's late pick 4 sequence, including the Grade 1 QE2 Challenge Cup. That race always produces a lot of fun horses moving forward. I remember Rushing Fall winning that one. I wish I could play Rushing Fall in that race again. I missed that horse. Boy, did she love Keeneland. If you're watching live or the replay, thanks for joining us. Give us a like, a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so that way whenever the Magic Mike Show, the Rocket Hour, Dudes Who Bet Sports, or of course the flagship program, Blinkers Off goes live. You will get notified. Howard and I are going to go ahead and give out our tickets. If you're listening, take a look to, or sorry, if you're watching, take a look below. I'm going to have the tickets here. And Howard, while I'm talking, go ahead and just double check. I know you gave it to me before we went live. Just make sure I've got the right numbers there. I can adjust it. But while you're looking, I'll go ahead and give my ticket. I'm going to start off going 2-7. With 459, with 249, with 146, 711 for 50 cents. That's $45. Howard, is your ticket correct?
It is correct. You see it there, 127 with 2345, with 1245, with a very shaky, nervous, only 14 on the end there. I like the one a lot. I mean, I could almost single the one and just and go for it. I think it's a perfect race to single, right? Because then you can spread elsewhere. By the way, Magic will be on my show next week. I don't mean to steal a promo, but Magic, I'm looking forward to having you on the HHH Racing podcast. I believe it'll be next Wednesday. We'll finalize that, but appreciate you coming on. And we're going to be talking Breeders' Cup next week. Start talking Breeders' Cup.
No, we've been doing it for, I think, 3 or 4 months on this show now.
Absolutely.
On Mondays. I'm excited. It's especially because we're at that point where this is the last real big. We've got grade one at Keeneland, and then Woodbine's got a grade one. I think we're done with grade ones until we get to the Breeders' Cup. So it slows down a little bit in terms of the other stakes, because all anybody cares about is what's happening internationally, for the Breeders' Cup. And speaking of that, the international horses are racing at Ascot this weekend on Saturday. So it's early Saturday morning for me here on the West Coast, but I've got my alarm set to tune in because a lot of Breeders' Cup potential horses for the turf, the filly mare turf, they're all going to be competing. So you want to tune into that one. Over at racingdudes.com, like I said, it's a little bit of a lighter week, but we've got the feature preview here for the Buffalo Trace Franklin County, including Signify if she chooses to run. You also have the Samo Bombs and the Ricky's Rockets for every day that's going on at Keeneland, so make sure you check that out. Howard, go ahead and give us another plug for your program and your YouTube channel, please.
Yeah, so the YouTube channel, again, you just go to the search bar. And by the way, the HHH is not wrestling. It stands for Howard's Horse Handicapping. So not a wrestling reference. But go to YouTube search bar, HHH Racing Podcast, usually Thursday nights, 8 o'clock. I've had some great guests on, as you've mentioned. We do a little Q&A with our guests, talk about, you know, some personal special interest stories, and then we get into handicapping. Also, I have a race day blog. You can look into purchasing that. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. You can get 8-to-1s like Rattle and Roll on there. And also on Twitter, as you can see on my name tag. And this last thing, if I may, I want to thank you, Magic, for coming on to my show. And we taught people that you understand, we shouldn't be competing against each other on these podcasts, right? We're trying to get as many people watching the shows interested in horse racing. So if you're a fan of myself and my show, please watch, you know, the Magic Bike Show. And if you're a fan of those guys, please check out the HHH Racing Podcast. It's Breeders' Cup coming up, guys. We need as much information as possible so we can crush it out of Del Mar. Thanks a lot, Magic. Really appreciate you having me on.
Of course. Yeah, no, absolutely. Make sure you follow me. It's at HKRAVETS. I'll spell out for the audio listeners there. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. We have one question here. We could use this as a teaser for next week's show when we talk more Breeders' Cup. Ross wants to know your thoughts, Howard, on Winning Map for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Ross thinks he's getting a little ignored at 8-to-1 in the future market right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he was really good. There's a horse called Jack Christopher that he's going to have to run into. And also, you know, it's a little bit hard to say right now. We have to see how the fields develop. But Winning Map out of Liam's Map, I'm almost positive, right? But it was impressive. You know, it's going to be very interesting, the pace scenario in that race, because there ought to be some speed. Corniche is going to, I'll just say right now, Corniche I'm going to be against, and it's going to be way over bet. I know he's a California horse, but I think there's some serious horses coming in from other places. But Winning Map can absolutely win. I think it depends on what the price is going to be. I will say that my early, way too early pick in that race will be a horse that finished second to Jack Christopher. The name is escaping me right now, but closed. Consumer Confidence? I can't remember the name of the horse.
Are you thinking about the Pletcher Maiden?
Yes.
Yeah.
I touted
command,
him.
Command Performance.
Thank you very much. Finished a nice second to Jack Christopher. I think has a big chance out at Del Mar, depending on how he works. But yeah, Ross, I mean, Winning Map is definitely a possible play, and you might even get more than that 8-to-1.
I would hold off and wait on try and get double digits because this is a one start horse. He's faced maidens going one turn. And if it's not like they're going into this Breeders' Cup Juvenile and it's like, I don't know who's going to win this. Like, we have a couple of very clear horses that, whether you're for or against them, Corniche is a very, like, logical contender in terms of its Baffert. There's a speed, and the horse can go two turns. He's won at Del Mar. Jack Christopher, he's got speed. It's Chad Brown. He's won that Breeders' Cup Juvenile race before.
Yeah.
Winning Map, I'm a little... If they're aggressive, great. I'm a little concerned that that's a little too much too soon for the horse. By the way, he did that with Classier last year. It broke Classier. Classier missed like 9-10 months because of that. It did not go well for him.
You know, and that's why I just going back to Rattle and Roll. Do we have a minute?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, go ahead.
So just to go back to the Rattle and Roll conversation, I have to, as much as I might want to see Rattle and Roll in the Breeders' Cup, you have to give a lot of respect to guys like Ken McPeak who understand horse flesh. The horse only got an 81 buyer. To your point, you know, he's got to ship all the way across the country, basically. Why not just race out of your home, you know, track at Churchill? I mean, the big goal is the Derby next year, right? So you might say, how can you skip the Breeders' Cup? Well, I mean, if that's not the spot, then you don't go there. And so I do want to give respect to trainers in general who are patient, especially with younger horses like Rattle and Roll, and pick other spots. I'll tell you what, if you're going to win a Breeders' Cup, any race, you better be seasoned. And these big, explosive, you know, big number horses who've only run once or twice, be very cautious. Because if they take any dirt or any kind of situation they're not used to, they could go completely the other way. So I agree with everything you said about Winning Map.
Well, I'm excited to talk more Breeders' Cup with you. Make sure you tune in next Wednesday. Go to Howard's YouTube page and make sure you subscribe so that you get alerted when that is live. And again, follow him on Twitter. He is at HKRAVETS. I am at Curtis Keller, Corporate Overlords, at Racing_Dudes. And of course, my lovely co-host, Mr. Samich, is at SummerBomb18, number one, number eight. Mike and I will be back on Monday to talk about probably a lot more Breeders' Cup stuff, and then I will see you on Wednesday on Howard's show. Good luck, everybody, this weekend. I'll see you next time.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
Death, taxes, and Magic Mike on Monday.